Welcome to Red Alert Radio, grassroots radio with an ear on the issues that matter to you. Hosted by your local Labour MPs.
Kia ora koutou, ko Julie Ferry tokuinga, ko Puki Tāpapa, Puki Wiwi, Te Maunga, ko Te Aonga, Te Awa, ko Manukau, Te Whanga, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou katoa. Kia ora, my name's Julie Ferry. I'm the Deputy Chair of the Puki Tāpapa Local Board, one of five Roskill community voice reps on that board of Auckland Council, and I'm part of the City Vision centre-left whānau across the city. I have a monthly spot here on Red Alert Radio, and I'm very keen to get your feedback. You can find me easily on social media, both Twitter and Facebook. Just search for Julie Ferry. Bit of a funny spelling on the last name. It's F for Fred, A-I-R-E-Y. And there's probably only about two or three of us in the world, so whichever one comes up, it'll either be me or it'll be someone related to me. We also now have a Red Alert Radio Facebook page. You can search for Red Alert Radio AKL and you should find us. We'll be putting up links to the podcasts once they're available online after this is on air on Thursdays just after nine, and as well as other bits of useful news relevant to our interests, so links to websites, photographs about things mentioned in the show, that kind of stuff. You can also get all our past shows on the Red Alert Radio archive at planetaudio.org.nz. Just search for Red Alert Radio in the program guide. Now today, I'm talking with Jackie Knight from Moths and Butterflies of NZ Trust, also known as MBNZT. And Jackie is actually more often known herself as the Butterfly Lady. So if the Lorax speaks for the trees, Dr. Zeus parlance, then Jackie speaks for the butterflies and moths, particularly the monarch butterfly. Thanks for coming in today.
No worries. Kia ora, Julie.
Now, Jackie, how did you first become interested in, now let me see if I can say this right, Lepidoptera, which is the
Lepidoptera
name.
Yeah. The butterfly and moth family. To be honest, Julia, I can't really remember, but it was, I guess it was like this. My parents brought us up, in particular my mother, to have a healthy respect for nature, and we fed the wild birds in our back garden, learnt lots about them looking out the window, and she was a great gardener, so we learned all about plants and weeds and things, and she taught us about monarch butterflies, but didn't know a lot. And then I did the same with my two children as they were growing up and found there were a lot of things we didn't know. So I'm a naturally inquisitive person and wanted to find out and share that with other people. So it grew like that.
Right. And so whereabouts did you grow up? Was it in Auckland?
Yes, in Western Springs. And later I lived in Russell where there's a lot more butterflies up there because it's warmer. And then now I live in Blockhouse Bay, not far from you.
Yeah, and so you're obviously quite familiar then with Auckland butterflies and moths. And I know you travel a bit for your work. Do you get a chance to sort of go around and see what's happening in other parts of the country?
Yes, it's great. For instance, driving between Mutapara and down Waikato and Moana Way, saw lots and lots of red admirals, which have completely left Auckland these days. You just don't see them there.
Right.
We're managing to bring back yellow admirals back into Auckland, and hopefully in a few years we'll see more red admirals too. It's such a shame that we don't see butterflies that used to be quite common in parts of New Zealand.
So what's driven the red admirals out?
Lack of awareness. I mean, we all know about kiwi and how to protect them and kauri trees and kauri dieback and what we should do and shouldn't do. But nobody even knows that for instance, the admirals exist. Very few people know that they exist. So if you don't know a species exists, how can you know how to look after it or have a respect for it? And the host plant of the admirals is stinging nettle. So most people actually, you know, if they thought they had stinging nettle in their garden, they'd get rid of it without even thinking twice about it.
Yeah, and how it fits into the broader ecosystem.
That's right.
Yeah. So one of the sort of first questions that came to mind, which I guess I've been asked by my kids and I didn't know the answer. What's the difference between a moth and a butterfly? Is a moth just out at night and a butterfly is out at day? What's the difference?
That's a typical difference, but it's not standard because there are some moths that like to fly during the day. The best description I've ever heard is that a butterfly is just a sophisticated moth.
Right.
Okay, which doesn't really help you, but there are ways you can tell it's a moth if you look at the way it holds its wings, and that's very hard to describe, but once you've seen it, looked at a few moths and thought about it, butterflies tend to hold their wings up above their backs, sort of perpendicular to their body, whereas a moth spreads them out and flat against a wall. Then most moths are quite dull looking, but then there are rules that are broken too, because I can think of two. The putridy moth is a beautiful green colour, and the cinnabar moth is scarlet, a bright scarlet, or is it crimson? So that's not a really good rule. And one thing that is different about them is that butterflies have antennae that are straight with a bump on the end, with a club on the end.
Yeah.
And moths are more like a pheasant's tail feather on a much reduced scale, of course. So they're more like a feather. So that's one good way you can tell the difference.
And so they are classified differently. It's not just that we go, oh, it's out at night and it's a drabber colour, so we've decided that's a moth. They are actually different.
No, they are classified differently. That's right. Yes. And most people don't like moths, which is very sad, because there are some great moths that do some great work in the garden or in the house, and there are a few that are pests as well.
Yes, I remember going on a school camp once, and we had a girl who was terrified of moths, and there was a big one flapping around. And have you, is it sort of any awareness of, because it does seem to be quite a common fear, is it something that you think has sort of had an impact on the species as well?
I don't really think so. I do come across a few people that are afraid of butterflies or moths and don't like to touch caterpillars and things, and they're terrified of them. But no, I think it's just one of those fears that some people have.
Do you think James and the Giant Peach might have played a role here? I've been reading that to one of my children lately, and enormous insects in it.
Yes, could be.
Yeah, a bit like Jaws with sharks.
That's right, yeah.
And so
maybe we need a film. Mm.
Yeah, a friendly butterfly film, friendly moth butterfly film. And what are the common misconceptions you come across about butterflies and moths and the environment that they need to succeed?
It's amazing how many people come up to me and say, I thought butterflies lived only a couple of days.
Right.
Now, lots of people tell me that. There are some moth species that only live a couple of days, but, for instance, a monarch butterfly lives 6 to 8 weeks after it's finished doing what it's here to do, and that is to breed, reproduce. And, in fact, monarch butterflies that emerge from the chrysalis in the autumn, they will live maybe up to 9 months because they overwinter as adults. Different species overwinter, you know, they have to continue the species throughout the winter, and you don't see them flying around over the winter. So they might overwinter as caterpillars or larvae or even pupae or chrysalises or cocoons. So monarchs overwinter as adults, and you'll see them all bunched together in tops of trees somewhere, and they only come out on sunny days. But that's one misconception about the life, the length of life of the adult butterfly or moth. And I think the other one is that if you touch a butterfly's wings, it will die. And that's quite amazing, because I'm handling butterflies all the time. And I think that comes from maybe a teacher or a parent said, don't touch it, you'll kill it. Thinking that, you know, if we overhandle these things, we might kill something or hold them too tight and kill them. And so we assume that what was meant, that if we do touch it, it will definitely die.
So it's
interesting, isn't it?
Well, it's interesting because also, I would say to my two-year-old, if he was going to grab a butterfly, don't touch it. But I would say to my nine-year-old, just be careful, because I know that if the two-year-old grabbed it, they'd crush it. Just same with the cat, right?
Yes.
You know, strokes the cat the wrong way, very earnestly trying to pat, whereas the 9-year-old does it the right way around. And so I wouldn't say don't touch the cat. I'd say, you know, great, you're being very gentle, that's wonderful.
Yes.
So one of the other things that I've sort of been thinking about is we sort of have this perception, I think, that we don't have that many different species in New Zealand. And do they tend to have been, do we have native ones? Are they introduced?
Oh, yes. Well, the monarch is classified as a native because it flew blue here.
Right.
According to the scientists, in 1840-something it was first documented as being here. But we do have some beautiful butterflies and moths, and quite a few of them. I mean, there's so much I don't know about moths, so I can't tell you a lot. But
that's okay.
As an example, we have the forest ringlet butterfly, which is only found in New Zealand, and it's the only one of its species. And that's disappearing mainly because nobody knows anything about it.
So whereabouts does that live?
That lives in, it's a forest species from its name, and you can find it north of Lewis Pass, and we did a big survey last year to find out where it was still in existence, and they've actually found it. I know it's been seen in the past up near Kaikoi.
Wow.
And it's also now on Little Barrier Island. There are quite a few because there's no predators down there now.
Yeah.
And on Great Barrier, I believe. So that's quite cool. But, you know, it's more common than we thought. A year ago, we didn't think it was as common as it is. So that's something we can be very happy about. The Red Admiral is a great species to mention too because it's only found in New Zealand. And there's a different species on the Chatham Islands.
Right.
And, of course, its host plant is...
stinging nettle.
In the wild, it's Urtica ferox, tree, stinging nettle tree.
Right.
But you can breed it on ordinary stinging nettle. So we're hoping to bring that back to Auckland and other places too, but it's a big mission.
And so how are you going about that? I mean, obviously you don't... you know, you can't sort of have a systematic breeding program, I suppose, like you can with sheep or cows or...
No, well, first of all, you need money. But it's easier to do with butterflies, I think, because you just have... You can, it's a bit like having a farm on a much reduced scale.
Right.
And you've just got to make sure the conditions are right. So lots of host plant and a secure area, you know, to keep out the... The wasps have done terrible things to our butterfly and moth population in New Zealand. Once you've got that established and more people willing to actually farm butterflies, then we should make progress. I'm amazed at how many people today are actually creating habitat for butterflies and moths, so that's really exciting. People, once they learn that stinging nettle has a really good value... are prepared to plant it, so that's quite cool, isn't it?
Absolutely, and I know at Eden Gardens, which is kind of one of those hidden gems of Auckland, on the, what's that, the eastern side, I think it is, of Maungawhau, Mount Eden. You can go in there, there's beautiful gardens, and I know you've done some work with them, haven't you, around getting some host plants?
Not specifically, but... some of our members have been, yes.
Yeah. Tell us a bit about that, getting host plants into that environment.
It's just finding a safe place to grow them. That's the big thing. They're at Kalmana, stinging nettles at Kalmana as well, so that's great. It's quite a network building up now, and the stinging nettle is actually, you can get introduced species which aren't favoured for by the weed busters people. But so long as you grow them, whatever stinging nettle you are, that you can get a native species as well, whatever species of nettle that you're growing, it needs to be in a secure area so that people don't get stung by it. And you don't want it spreading, obviously, into other parts of your garden. So an old bath or paddling pool is great for that sort of purpose. And then so long as you let some dock, which is a weed in most people's garden, grow in abundance, or not too abundant, but you just need one leaf every now and then. When you do get stung, you rub this dock leaf on your sting and the sting is negated. Yeah, so it's quite cool.
It's a companion planting for butterfly propagation. So,
and some people are planting urtica species on their boundaries where they don't want the neighbours coming in. So that's quite cool, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a good idea. And, I mean, I'm thinking about could council plant some on those areas where people try and cross the road and we don't want them to cross the road because it's dangerous.
Exactly.
And, you know,
every time I come through the motorway complex in Grafton there, and I think, look, there are places there that they obviously don't want people going. Why not plant Urtica ferox there? It'd be great.
And so I don't know if you're aware of the Mayor's Million Trees program. And he hasn't, yeah. You know, he has been clear that by trees he means plants. He doesn't mean actual trees. But that is looking at systematically all of the council land and assessing where there are opportunities to basically plant out grass, what was grass, into bush, wetlands, all sorts of, you know, fruit tree forests, all of that kind of stuff. So there could be some real opportunities for your organisation around planting food for, and I mean, there has been a conversation about making sure there's food trees for birds, native birds, to make sure we have those pathways so they can get through the city and come back to the city. So there might be a similar opportunity there for moths and butterflies.
Sounds wonderful, Julie. Thank you for that.
And so you've talked a bit about host plants. So you've talked about the host plants for the Red Admiral. How do you go about sourcing those? Because, I mean, some of them, obviously you can get swan plants for your monarchs at the garden centre. But other plants, like where would you go to get some stinging nettle in the first place?
Well, it's all about networking, and so our members ask in the forum on our website about stinging nettle or on our Facebook page, and I've just recently been giving away cuttings of my stinging nettle because it was crossing the path and I didn't want it where it was going. So I've got 5 or 6 more people growing nettle now. People are very... welcome to contact me, and I'm happy to help them out in that way or put them in touch with somebody who's got nettle cuttings to give away.
Great. And the website, listeners, which we'll put a link up with this anyway, but it's www.monarch.org.nz, and Jackie mentioned the members forum they have there where they exchange messages about, hey, I've got some spare of this, or has anyone got some of that, and those kinds of things. And you've found that a useful tool? Is that nationwide or just in Auckland?
Yeah. No, nationwide. Lots of people asking, you know, they can't get enough swan plants. What happened this last winter, because it was so wet, a lot of the swan plants died out, and then, of course, slugs and snails thrived, and so they ate a lot of the swan plants as well, so people are really struggling to get big swan plants in their gardens now.
Yeah.
So we encourage people to buy twice as many and hopefully overwinter some of those so that they're big plants for next year.
And so when you say overwinter the plant, what does that mean? Does that mean you put something over it?
Grow them more as a perennial rather than as just a food source. A lot of people go to the garden centre and they buy 6 swan plants, feed them to their caterpillars and go back and buy more, and they throw the roots and the stems away, and I think how wasteful is that?
I got stuck in that trap once when I bought one tree when I was flatting, and then the caterpillars ate all that tree and I had to buy another one, and I think I ended up having to have 13 in total, and they ended up putting their chrysalises all over the place in very strange places in our lounge. Yeah, it was. They also poo a lot, the caterpillars, which is something they don't tell you about on the packaging. And so it was, I learned a lesson out of that to keep them outside. So we've talked about swan plant, we've talked about stinging nettle and dock. And what was the name of the native species again? Urtikai?
Urtica ferox is the nettle tree.
Right. And how do you spell the first one? The first word?
Urtica. U-R-T-I-C-A.
Cool. Great. It's
the nettle family is in urtica.
Great. Mm. And are there any other host plants that people should be thinking about planting in their gardens?
Yes. Once you get hooked into it, there's Milimbetia for the copper butterflies, and there's all sorts of host plants for the blue butterflies, for instance, clover. Let your clover grow long. Don't mow it every Sunday just because you think the neighbours will be growling at you. Let it grow long and let's bring back the blue butterflies. They're so gorgeous.
Yeah.
And we don't see them anymore.
And that's the host plants. And are the host plants, do they also act as food plants, or is there sometimes some other plants as well?
When I say host plants, they are, so the butterflies lay their eggs onto a host plant.
Yeah.
With the monarchs, it's milkweed, or like swan plant. With admirals, it's the urtica family.
Yeah.
With the white admiral, the Honshu white admiral, which we haven't seen in Auckland yet, but it's been relatively recently, 2 or 3 years, introduced into the country to control Japanese honeysuckle.
Right.
So in the future, if you've got Japanese honeysuckle, you will see caterpillars on that of the Honshu white admiral. It's another butterfly species. So every different butterfly species has a different host plant. Yes.
And so what else can people do to encourage butterflies and moths to live in their own, you know, their own gardens? And obviously, you know, you're not going to put nets up and keep them on your property, but what can people do to encourage them?
Well, people don't realise that the adults, butterflies fly around, and they need nectar. So you need lots of colourful nectar species of flowers. Now, daisies are a perfect butterfly nectar species because they have a landing pad. They're nice and flat and they're like a heliport. So that you need lots of colourful flowers to provide nectar for butterflies. So forget-me-nots, in my garden I was watching a cabbage white butterfly enjoying nectar from the forget-me-nots.
Yeah.
So you need lots of, and butterflies don't have very good eyesight, so they can't just see one pop of colour in your greenery. They need masses of it. So where you see it on a sunny day like today, you see Arctotis really blooming. It's that yellow flower, daisy-like flower. That goes really great. Bottlebrush is another lovely shrub which provides lots of nectar, and it's also great for tuis, of course, as well. So you need lots of colour. You need shelter. You'll see monarch caterpillars crawling around your garden looking for a sheltered place to make their chrysalis. So flax, for instance, is great for that. And if you have a flax bush next to your swan plant, you'll find all these beautiful little chrysalises underneath the flax leaves, or cabbage tree leaves are great for that too, and lilies as well. Yeah, so it's a lot of thought goes into actually creating a garden or butterfly habitat, and that's why we've put a course together which is available on our website as well.
Oh, that's great. And, I mean, obviously this is about people planting on their own land, or, you know, probably land that they have their house on, and so they get the direct benefit there of seeing the butterflies. What can local or even central government be looking to do to help spread that practice on private land, but also thinking about, you know, the vast holdings of public land that sit with council and with central government?
Yeah. Well, for example, in my own area, there's you see an initiative happening like in the Hillsborough Cemetery, where there's lots of lovely swan plants growing there, and I think it's a delight there to go there on a sunny day and actually be sitting around visiting a grave and seeing butterflies flying around and all the colourful flowers. There's also, we've created butterfly reserve in Blockhouse Bay Recreational Reserve, so that's another great place when I'm working in the garden there, and I see people come by and they don't know about it, but once they understand about the butterflies and what they're doing there, they're really quite excited. There's another lovely one on the corner of Mount Eden and Balmoral Road called the Balmoral Heights Reserve. That's a great place to go and have a look and see what's being done for butterflies. So they're just little pockets of land where we can really think about what we're doing in the environment. And it's great for children because it opens their eyes and they learn so much about nature, and they learn about management as well. You know, you plant a swan plant, suddenly you've got 50 caterpillars. You're going to have to do something to make sure you've got lots of food for those butterflies, or cover the plants up so that you don't get more eggs and caterpillars on them.
Yeah.
That's really great for kids.
And so, you know, you've mentioned those three sites. I think that's great. And I'm familiar with the Hillsborough Cemetery site that's in my area. In fact, I was there last week. Uh-huh. And I've noticed that there, some of the planting is about swan plants, but some of the planting is also about having those bright flowers and
yes.
in large clusters as well. So
yeah.
If a, I don't know, a local board or a school or a scout group were listening and they wanted to think about how they could increase the plantings of host and food plants for butterflies in their area,
mm-hmm.
they should get in touch with you. How would that work?
Well, people do get in touch with us. They either email trust@monarch.org.nz, that's trust, T-R-U-S-T, and ask questions, or they can learn a lot from our magazines or from reading our website. And then, you know, it just depends what their question is, but I've had a kindergarten get in touch today wanting a speaker to go and see them and talk to them about the best way of doing it. We get all sorts of questions coming in from all different directions, different media, so it's great. There's always pieces. I see there's a piece on the stuff website today about planting for monarch caterpillars as well.
Great. And I think one of the things I think about with the Hillsborough Cemetery site is the potential there, once you've sort of got a bit of a critical mass going and those plants, particularly the swan plants, start to self-seed around that community,
uh-huh.
and you end up with sort of a, you know, in that case monarchs, all around Hillsborough as a result of work done in one location in the cemetery,
exactly.
which to be fair is a very large site,
yeah.
And it's also a very windy site, so the opportunity there for you know, to spread that, to spread the plants and to spread the butterflies, and
yeah.
even, you know, one day maybe if we get them along the coast, we join up with your Blockhouse Bay.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. Yes, you drive down Miola Road and you see lots of monarchs there now, because I'm not sure if it was planted or self-sown plants, but it's increasing. In my own street, the neighbours now all know about monarch butterflies.
I bet they do.
Because the seeds have scattered themselves far and wide.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's great. And people are getting more and more interested. So it's, sometimes I wonder, you know, what we've started, and then I can see where we've come over the last 12 years, and it gets very exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you very much for the work that you do. I think, you know, it's wonderful, particularly for children, but also for people who've come from other countries, to be able to see just in their everyday lives what, as a child, I very much took for granted. So thank you.
Yeah. And you're very welcome.
Thank you very much for talking to me today as well. We might not leave it 12 years to check in with you, so we might come back and check in with you in a year or two and see how it's going, see what the
excellent,
new spots are. And yeah. So
thanks
very much, Jackie, and thanks for listening, folks. Love to hear your feedback via Twitter or Facebook. And a reminder that you can listen again to this interview or any of our back catalogue from the Planet FM website, planetaudio.org.nz. Check out programs, and we are under R. And you can also find us on Facebook, Red Alert Radio, AKL, in your search box should do it. This has been Julie Ferry for Red Alert Radio. Ka kite ana. Yeah.
Get together with your local MP next week at 9:05 a.m. Or listen online anytime on planetaudio.org.nz/redalertradio.